Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly Neff. This hit show will illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. Renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake to the greatest version of yourself. Learn to tap into your intuitions, think critically about our world, heal emotional and psychological wounds, and follow your passions to live your dreams. Each week, you'll learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness and explore the deeper knowledge within. Welcome home. Now here's your host, Dr. Kelly Neff.
Hello, everyone. I am Dr. Kelly Neff, and you are listening to Lucid Planet Radio on Transformation Talk Radio, CRN Digital Talk, and WBLQ 1230 AM, Rhode Island, Connecticut, and New York. Stay with us for the next hour, and let us help you experience some inspiration and creativity and fun. Every week here on Lucid Planet Radio, we have some of the most gifted scientists, healers, speakers, and authors helping you to become the greatest version of yourself. You can find out so much more on thelucidplanet.com. Stream all of our podcasts for free on lucidplanetradio.com, as well as iTunes, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, et cetera, et cetera. You can also please connect with me. I'd love to hear from you. Facebook and Twitter, The Lucid Planet with Dr. Kelly, as well as check out my brand new Instagram for my weird and wonderful life, just Instagram, The Lucid Planet. You can also, on our website, find out how to nominate yourself or someone else for the show, or become an advertising partner to our extensive audience that reaches over 11 million homes in the U.S. And I also have a very big announcement to make for 2017 that is coming, so stay tuned for that. So today's show highlights kind of some of my favorite topics, which is women in comedy and women who are performers and women who are creative and who put themselves out there, not through the eyes of the patriarchy, but really by stepping into their own power. I've always found this incredibly inspiring. I did a show with Aaliyah a couple weeks ago, about women in the music industry and electronic music producers. And so today's show is kind of about women in the entertainment comedy field. Now, I have to admit, like, I'm just throwing it out there, I have definitely secretly always wanted to be a comedian. I'm just not sure if I'm funny. I know I'm really weird, but I don't know if I have what it takes to get up there and perform in that way. And anybody who has performed, whether it's, singing, dancing, telling jokes, et cetera, you know how tough it can be. But I genuinely believe that laughter is kind of the great unifier and really the best way to approach some of the very complex and controversial topics that we deal with in life. I feel like we're a society that's so divided, so wrapped up in all this BS going on, and funny enough, humor is kind of what breaks down the barriers for a lot of very intense subjects. And speaking of controversial and intense subjects, it really doesn't get more controversial than my guest today, Adrienne Trescott, who has made tons of headlines this year with her one-woman show where she performs semi-nude and makes jokes about rape. Yes, no, this is really a thing if you haven't heard of her. She basically is reappropriating what has been this kind of traditional male misogynistic humor about rape and completely flips it around. And her show, Asking for It, has really stunned the world and had quite an impact. And, when I heard about this, I knew I had to invite her on Lucid Planet Radio. I want to hear her story and find out, where her inspiration comes from and, of course, what it's like to perform naked. So again, Adrienne Trescott, she is a choreographer, a comedian, a writer. She's half of the Boundary Busting Cabaret Act, the Wow Wow Sisters, and she's also a Doris Duke Impact Award winning artist. And I just love what she says, that she'll perform anywhere and really is attracted to the possibility of failure as a mandate for rigor. I love that. Adrienne, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Adrienne, I love that mandate. Is that the key to kind of being funny, is that you're totally down to just fail miserably?
I actually think so. Yeah. I think there's a real truth to that. I mean, for me, I just say personally, I've learned that if I get an idea that, like, when an idea strikes me that makes me kind of go like, oh no, oh, you couldn't. But I'm really attracted to it, but it really has this potential to fail. That's actually when I feel like that might be exactly where I need to be working. Because there's something about what makes it seem like it could fail, which I guess would speak to like, well, then that means it might be provocative enough to interest me. But because it's provocative, it could fail if you don't work really hard to pull it off.
Something about being right on that line, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, totally. But I feel like so much of the funniest stuff does that. It's like right on the line and you're like, is it okay to laugh at this? This is kind of messed up, but it's actually really funny. Have you always been interested in kind of more provocative topics?
I suppose so. Like politically, I'm, you know, pretty far left, and I've grown up in terms of being a performer very much in like a queer performing community. But I've always liked to provoke. I wasn't always attracted to provocative topics. But I felt like I would like to provoke by messing around with a form as much as just like saying something outrageous or something. Asking for it is definitely the most explicitly political provocation I've ever done. Other things I think have been a little more abstract and kooky and like, what if you did this on trapeze? Because no one usually does this on trapeze. That kind of provocation.
Sure. I want to talk about asking for it, but first I just love to hear a little bit about your background. You know, how long have you been a performer, and kind of, I know you describe yourself as a multi-platform artist, and I would love to hear kind of about that progression.
Sure. First of all, I will say that term does kind of embarrass me, even though I used it about myself, but that's what they say these days.
That's what they say.
Yeah. Like if you'd want to try and write a grant, you're like, I guess I'm a multi-platform artist. But I moved to New York to be a dancer and a choreographer. And that's what I did when I first got here. Through the sort of like weirdo dance community in New York, I met some people doing circus in a very, very untraditional way. The person who sort of introduced me to it is a woman named Jennifer Miller, who worked as the bearded lady of Coney Island for a very long time. And she made this really kooky circus called Circus Amok. And, you know, I was a gymnast when I was a kid. So it was more like, well, I can still do a back handspring. And it was kind of adults without amazing circus skills doing circus in different parks in New York and stuff. And then I started working with another company called Lava, which happened to be an all-women's dance company, but we kind of used circus as the physical vocabulary. And then we started training really hard and actually became good trained circus performers. And I still was making dances and being in other people's dances and theater pieces on the side. And a woman who I met in both of those things, Tanya Gagne, who's the other Vau Vau sister, we started doing some stuff on the side, which was mostly physical, like doubles trapeze and doubles acrobatics. But we also both wrote songs. She wrote these funny songs on a bass, like she wrote these 1-minute love songs on bass, and I wrote kind of 3-chord country songs. And both of our songs were quite like sort of dirty and funny. Yeah. So one day we decided to try to combine them. And it's funny because I wanted to talk at some point about the phrase when you were introing the show saying that you like, you've secretly always wanted to do comedy.
Totally.
Like, I think that's a phrase that comes up for women all the time. I secretly wanted to do this. And even still, a lot of us don't always feel the license to just say, what the heck, and give it a go. And I think that's pretty fascinating. And I remembered seeing some friends of mine, like two women playing their songs out live in the East Village, and they were awesome. But I was also like, well, they're just like, you know, they've got the stones to get up there and do it. Yeah. And I went home to Tanya, and I was like, I think this next gig, we should say, yes, we'll do trapeze, but we're also going to sing and like just sing a song each and see what happens. Yeah. And then we did. And we did all sorts of like, we wore hilarious outfits. We did acrobatics while we were playing because we had this thing of like, what if we're terrible? We can't really play guitar that well. But we thought, well, if we do it while like I'm balancing on your feet, it won't really matter because it'll be such a spectacle. And then we got like a regular gig. That they said, you know, why don't you guys do once a week at this place called Galapagos in Williamsburg? And we would do a show every Monday night, and we would sing our songs, and we'd do trapeze over the bar, and we would do all kinds of weird things. But it wasn't really until we were doing that and singing songs that we realized we had to talk. Because most of what we did was either singing with a song and a guitar and everything, or some kind of like neo vaudeville act with music. And it was kind of just realizing that like, well, in between songs, if you're tuning or something, you better say something. And we kind of started off just sort of hoping something funny would come out. And then I got more and more interested in like writing that, you know, like writing the banter in between. But I think that that's really the trajectory of going from like being a physically based artist to a speaking one and a writing one.
Quite an amazing trajectory, and particularly, you know, where it's led you. Adrian, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I can't wait to talk to you about Asking for It, your one woman show, performing nude, really just looking at that whole process of what brought you to this point. It's totally rad. So stick with us, and we will be back in a couple minutes to talk more with Adrian Truscott.
Awesome.
Brand consultant and coach Jen Morgan is here with Radically Distinct Radio to help maximize your brand's power to produce results. Whether you are a person with a dream and unsure where to start, or a CEO of a successful company wondering what's next, Jen Morgan and the RAD method empowers you to play to your strengths and focus your competitive edge so you can show up in the world as your most powerful brand. Go to jenmorgan.com or call 206-972-5366.
Song of the Heart, Walking the Path of Light, from author and healer Francine Vail, is available now. Through Francine's life story, we learn how imperative it is to love one another. Once this simple truth is learned, peace on earth will prevail. Song of the Heart is a life lived and a story told for this purpose. To learn more about Francine and her amazing gifts, or to order your copy of the book today, visit angelsandlightbeings.com.
Are you ready for a game changer? Sarah Westall is bringing you Business Game Changers Radio. Sarah brings you leading experts, visionaries, and newsmakers who provide the best commentary on big issues and cutting-edge innovations. Sarah's 20 years as a business executive will help you think like an entrepreneur with expertise, energy, and attitude. Tune in to Business Game Changers Mondays at noon Pacific, 3 Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Do you want to achieve your goals? Do you want to strengthen relationships with others? Do you want to improve your financial status? Colette Marie Steffen is partnering with Mark Kettenbach to bring you an energetic upgrade online experience. Unfold and develop your full potential. Visit energeticupgrade.com today for more information. That's energeticupgrade.com.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good, and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and my guest today is comedian Adrienne Trescott, who is talking with us all about her journey and experiences through finding her comedic voice in this way, and really about her new one-woman show, Asking for It. Before we continue, Adrienne, I just want to make sure that everybody knows how to contact you to find out more about your show, your performances, etc.
Sure. My website, which is just myfullname.com. AdrienneTrescott.com. I don't update it as quickly as I should, and I have more fun updating on Facebook and Instagram. Facebook's the same name, and Instagram is Mrs. Truscott, spelled M-I-S-S-U-S, little underscore, and then my last name.
Nice. Mrs. Perfect. Mrs. So, yeah, when I put this podcast up, too, I'll make sure to link to all of your stuff so people can find you pretty easily. But, I mean, this picture, there's these great pictures of you with this absurd outfit of blonde wig and a jean jacket and no pants with like beers on your crotch, just like circulating the internet. And so that's kind of a nice way to create your comedic identity. I think like anybody who searches for you, they're going to see all these crazy images from Asking for It. And, you know, so what, can you tell me a little bit about kind of what inspired you to write it and kind of what your intentions are putting the show forward?
Yes, I can say that I also, although I was a performer and did lots of performance that was funny, I too secretly harbored a desire to do stand-up, and I was terrified of it. Some part of me just thought that's like just one more layer scarier than just like on stage banter with one of your best friends while you're singing funny songs. But I'd always listened to it as a kid and a teenager and an adult. I watched comedy. Most people would take their first stab by trying out, 5 minutes at an open mic. But I thought I would try out an hour of rape jokes and see how that went. Which I think comes because I was used to making full shows because of like my dance background and stuff. But, Anyway, I was working on it without quite realizing I was working on it. I think some of it came from material that would like pop up in my head that didn't feel like it was appropriate for the Vow Vow Sisters shows because it was too specific. Yeah. And I think it came from just at the time feeling this like, that there was ways that people spoke about rape and sexual violence that was so overtrodden and so lazy and so unquestioned. And even I found like even campaigns that were about stemming sexual violence or marketing campaigns for rape crisis centers still focused all the attention on the victims, understandably to like help them. But I just felt like it was never addressing the crime before it happens and how to prevent it. And I just felt like there was this like vacuum of silence about all these other things that don't get said.
That's
okay.
Sorry, I get excited.
There was like, and I just started thinking, what if you could do a comedy show about it? Like, because you know, if I wanted only to be a political activist, I would have taken a very different route. And then I could voice my thoughts about this in a, you know, at a podium, at a rally or something. But the idea that you could sort of corral a group of people into a comedy show and then disguise what is a feminist rant against sexual violence as a comedy show, that, you know, I could like sort of, it would be really interesting and challenging as an artist for me to make. And I could possibly trick audiences into listening to another angle.
Yes. Well, no, that's like my favorite thing about comedy. People have their defenses down a little. So they're more, we know, like psychology, they're more willing to hear information that goes against their attitudes and not immediately counter argue it or block it. You know, they're just kind of like, huh, okay. But I mean, the title of the show, Asking for It, I'm assuming that that is a reference to the whole idea so much of, and you're absolutely right. I was a psychology, sexuality professor, and we would teach about sexual violence, and they literally have handouts about like how to avoid being raped. And it was like, don't wear your hair in a ponytail because then people can grab it. And like, don't wear provocative clothes and like, you know, always cover your drink and go to the bathroom. And I would actually get really insulted. Like the school would mandate that we would give these forms to people. And you're absolutely right. You're basically telling women just by existing, they're asking for it. And that is their responsibility when obviously that's not the case. Right.
Yeah. It's And it's so outrageous. And I had a really, I haven't been working on this show since I was in university, but I had a moment in a class in university that I realize now is pivotal to this show. A professor brought in, it was a very small class, like 13 or 14 people. And it was like 10 women and 3 guys. And the professor was male. And he brought in all these statistics about, gender imbalances. So it was like pay inequality, domestic violence, rape statistics. And he said, you know, 2 in 5, the statistic he read at the time, he was like, 2 in 5 women get raped. Like, how does that make you feel? And then he said, I mean, in this room, that means 4 women in this room, statistically speaking, have been raped. How does that make you feel? And of course, it was an incredibly confronting thing to say to women who were like 19 and 20 and possibly had been a victim of rape.
Yeah.
So it was really confronting. It felt very uncomfortable, clearly, to everybody in the room. And there was this silence and the professor kept saying, how's it make you feel? How's it make you feel? Somebody give me feedback. Like, and I just finally, I was like, I was so enraged I could barely talk. But when I did, I said, this is how it makes me feel. I would like to know which of the 4 males in this room raped us, statistically speaking, because I'm not interested in talking to the victims because it's already happened. But if you want to shine this light on this room, then if there's 4 women who have been raped, there's 4 guys. Did each one of you do it? I was like, you're a male professor in a position of authority. Did you do all of them?
Yeah.
You guys, I was just like, you guys answer this question because I'm not. And it got real, real quiet. And that was like such a turning point for me of like, why do people still talk about it like this? And to be honest, that was 20 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I remember since then, I was like, and then I, everywhere I turned, I was like, God, this conversation still isn't changing. Now it is. I genuinely feel like it's really changing. And I feel like the internet has a huge, huge thing to do with that.
The social media shaming of people like Brock Turner, right? Yeah. And just like the outcry that suddenly there's a voice to gather all these people together. We feel victimized and marginalized and like our voices aren't heard. And now it's like, you can send hate mail to this judge who gave this guy probation for rape. And you can see like, you know, you and like, I'm not saying, you know, I know that outside of Brock Turner's house, there were a bunch of dudes with guns standing around saying, I will rape you. And like, maybe that's not, maybe that's too far.
Not ideal.
But
well,
the idea
and you
like,
want to go, what? Nobody needs a man with a gun on this conversation. Yeah. Thank you very much. Like, we got this. Why don't you sit down, put your gun back in your pants, and let us tell you how this should work?
America, you know?
Yeah.
So, but at least you're absolutely right. There is visibility, and there we are starting to see things in a different way. And you know, I've been attempted victim of sexual assault, and almost every woman that I know has at some point, and at some point they have been blamed for it. That it was their fault that they got too drunk, or they didn't, they trusted someone they shouldn't have, or they shouldn't have been wearing that, blah, blah, blah. And like, I just, I love the idea of your show because it completely reclaims all of that. And you're standing on stage with your vagina out talking about rape, almost like a challenge, you know, almost, almost like, okay, like, do I deserve it too? Because that's pretty much what society and everybody has told me. And so I find that very empowering.
I do sort of put that dangerous and unlikely possibility on stage in the show. I do sort of say like, well, I have a couple, I've had a couple of drinks and here's my outfit. So in theory, if that's all it takes, then there's going to be a pretty rowdy finale at this show. And of course that makes everybody horrified. And which is my point, which is to say, of course, actually, the only reason and the only way that would happen is if there's a rapist in the room willing to do that. That's the only way it happens. Exactly. It's the one and only factor that you can't take out of the equation.
Exactly.
You know, and when I have these kind of conversations where, I mean, I barely engage in them anymore because they're so backwards, but anyone who brings up like drunkenness or attire or behavior like that, I'm just like, in every culture in the world, this happens. In cultures where women are not allowed out of the house or to walk down the street by themselves, where all you can see are their eyes, where they're not allowed to go to school, it still happens.
Yes,
so they weren't drunk and they weren't wearing a mini skirt. So please explain to me how this is about outfits.
Yeah, and it's great to see the attitudes changing. Adrienne, when we come back from the break, I want to talk more about the audience reactions and men, women, different countries, how people have reacted to the show. So I'm Dr. Kelly. I'm here on Lucid Planet Radio with Adrienne Trescott, and we're going to talk more about asking for it and kind of the way that culture and society is interpreting this message. So stick with us, and we will be right back.
Beyond being this amazing neurologist, inventor, author, Dr. Dan Cohen has been called to look at technology and look at personal and spiritual development and merge these together. His technology uses the healing and psycho-spiritual effects of synchronized sounds, vibrations, electromagnetic fields, and how that interacts with us in our nervous system in what we're calling the Soltech chair.
The Soltech Lounge induces profound levels of relaxation that transition over time into deep meditative states. The synchronized sound, vibration, and magnetic field induce these states. The subject doesn't have to work at it.
To learn more, go to soltechwellbeing.com. That's S-O-L-T-E-C, well-being.
Tune in to the Angels and Answers Psychic Radio Show with clairvoyants Artie Hoffman and Sky Siegel every Thursday for a two-hour show, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern Time on Transformation Talk Radio. Artie and Sky deliver spiritual and motivational messages with passion and a sense of humor. Call in 800-930-2819 for live and on-air readings. Visit ArtieHoffman.com and SkyOfAngels.com.
Tune in to The Jen Royster Show, intuitive guidance to inspire your life, each Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific and 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This amazing show is an inspirational hour that will take you on an epic metaphysical journey to discover the spiritual approach to life's greatest challenges. Dr. Jen is an internationally known intuitive counselor, spiritual teacher, and energy healer. Call in for intuitive readings and visit JenRoyster.com for more information.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
We are back on Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly, and I am here with comedian Adrienne Truscott talking about her unbelievably provocative and interesting and controversial show, Asking for It. Adrienne, I love talking to you.
And me too. I mean, to you.
Right. Well, you know, we're crushing it. And like you were saying, you're in New York. I'm in Denver. The studio is in Seattle. We're taking it all the way across America today, and I love it. What I wanted to ask you is, you've taken the show on the road, correct?
Yes.
And how have you also traveled? I read something about you traveled to some country and you had to prove your vagina was art in order to play a show. Is this a true thing?
Yes, I did. Well, it would have been, I'm pretty sure it would have been the highlight of my adult life. I've done the show a lot in the States, in the UK, and all over Australia, and a couple other places, a little bit in Europe. But this Australian production company was producing a comedy festival in Singapore. And is that where it was? I believe so. And they wanted to bring the show there. And they said, we might be having some trouble with the venue. Would you be able to do it wearing pants? And I said, no, that's not what the show is. It's a really powerful part of the show. And for now, I'm not doing it a different way. That's the show. And then they said, okay, well, they got back to me a few days later. And they're like, some arm of the Singapore government is going to get in touch with you about like the creative nature of your show. And I was like, oh, okay. And then, but in my mind, I was thinking in the taxes or something, or, you know, like, oh, I have to, like, the character has to smoke in this show because the character's real life. And in real life, they died of lung cancer, like that kind of
thing. Yeah.
And then I just got this form, which had a sort of odd translation into English when it arrived to me. And one of the questions, which will remain the best question I've ever been asked, is why do you get it out and how long is it out for? First they said, describe the costuming and the reason for the costuming in the show. And then that was followed by, after we'd established we were discussing my vagina, it said, why do you get it out and how long is it out for? It's like, it's not like I'm taking a dog for a walk. I answered it to the best of my ability and prayed to a God I don't believe in that I would get the license just to have it, just to be like, oh, this, it's my vagina license. Everything I'm doing is totally okay. I have a license for my vagina.
Dude,
I could get stopped by cops and be like, oh my gosh, officer, was I speeding? Here, let me get, that's not my driver's license.
Yep. You're like, just in case you needed my permission for me to, you know, be here with my vagina, here it is.
Yeah.
I'm totally good with my vagina.
Fully licensed.
That's great. So were you able to perform the show in Singapore or no?
I am sorry to say I was not granted. Me and my vagina were not granted a license to perform in Singapore.
Oh, well, you know.
Vagina is no good.
Nope, you got it out for too long.
I know. They were like, you know what? It's not coming out for any amount of time at all.
No, behind a screen, maybe, you know, but it just wouldn't have the same effect. So do you think a lot of people who come to your show are coming just to kind of gawk at the spectacle of this, of a woman with no pants?
Yes. That was always, I believe that that is true. It was always my understanding and my intention that that would draw people to the show for that reason. And that was always fine with me because A, I want a mixed audience. B, I want to talk to those people. C, there's a bunch of ways you can go, you can find a vagina in this culture without having to listen to an hour of feminist comedy. So good on you for coming to this version. I definitely did know it would sell tickets, and I was quite conniving about that, or pragmatic, because I also know people would be like unsure and, you know, not sure if they trusted what I was doing. To many people before the show, like, was out there proving itself, of course, it sounded like an absolutely horrible, terrible idea. But I also knew that when I first did the show, I did it free. And I was like, I know that as an artist and as a woman and as a costumer, I have sound, dramaturgical, artistic reasons for making this choice.
Yes.
Outside of that, I know that it will also make for a great poster. It'll create curiosity and it'll get people in who might not otherwise come.
Yes, exactly.
But I also, as an artist, grant any audience, I don't know right now in America with Trump supporters, but I used to grant any person and any audience enough humanity to imagine that they are able to look at a vagina and also listen to words being spoken at the same time.
I mean,
a lot of people are like, Yeah.
I used to teach college human sexuality, and I can verify that that is not always the case.
Not always true. Yeah.
I cut the 18-year-old some slack. I mean, are you...
But the opposite of that is, like, I know people can just stare at a vagina and not talk and not think. So part of it was like, okay, what about if we tried this experiment? What if you stare at my vagina and I say a bunch of things that might make you think? And it is my experience, because I do get challenged on this all the time. My experience time and time again is that, yes, people can look at a vagina, especially when it's live and embodied by an empowered woman, not just on a screen or on a magazine, that actually when a vagina is in the room with you and you know, you realize that it's not just this weird abstract paradise, but part of a full human being who's also talking and alive and engaged, it really humanizes.
Yeah,
you know.
Especially when they have a vagina license, then it's like all good.
Exactly. You know? I'm not saying everybody can do it, but.
Well, you have a de facto license. If everyone ever earned one, it's definitely you. So have you had like extreme reactions? I mean, part of the show is to kind of elicit extreme emotional responses, I think. You know, the idea, like, rape jokes are they ever really okay? I mean, we know from the past, there's been so many comedians, male comedians, who make tons of rape jokes. And I know right around the time that your show came out, everyone was comparing it to kind of Daniel Tosh, right? Telling a female heckler in the crowd, I hope you get gang raped by five guys in the crowd. Mm-hmm. And, you know, men very flippantly say this kind of stuff and joke about this kind of stuff, but coming out of a female's mouth in a different way, you know, it's bound to elicit some different kinds of reactions. It's an expectation violation. It also kind of calls into question the whole idea of the male comedians for ever doing this to begin with. So have you had... like, what are your kind of best and worst, like, audience reactions that you've had?
Wowza. I remember very clearly when I was first doing the show, its very first, like, week or two out at Edinburgh Fringe, quite a few young male comedians coming up to me and saying that they really loved it, that it gave them a lot to think about in terms of their own material.
Oh, that's good.
Which was really exciting. I had comedians who I call out in the show come to the show and be in the audience while I'm calling them out. Nice. And that was great. Like, one of the comedians who came, he was an awesome audience member. He did that thing of like unwittingly saying kind of sexist things afterwards in that way that you're like, you don't even realize what you just said. I've had, you know, once the show started getting a lot of attention and critical acclaim, I had a couple guys who I think would like to think of themselves as kind of the bad boys of comedy indirectly find out if there was a way that their photo could come down off my table. Nice. And then I wanted to go like, well, it all depends, doesn't it? Do you stand behind your comedy? Because if you do, be proud about it. But if you're saying my show made you think about your material, that's one thing. If you're saying my show's getting more attention than you and you don't want to be on my table looking bad like one of those dumb, lazy-ass rape joke comics, that's a different situation.
Yeah, exactly. Don't shame me. Don't hold me accountable. Just pretend it didn't happen. And
yeah. But, you know, I've had some really amazing friends of mine who are comics who also helped me with some, you know, like, hey, you know, have you ever thought about trying this on that joke or like saying this instead or, you know, like timing stuff. And they've also said to me in a very like honest and genuine way, like, you know, I really have thought about, there's this one joke I do. I do think it's funny, but part of me feels like, is it funny enough? And I don't do it anymore. And, you know, my point has never been to censor anybody.
Sure.
It's more me just going, you make your jokes and I'll make mine and we'll just see how it goes.
Yeah.
You know, I do think Daniel Tosh was being, quote, ironic when he said that. But then you want to go, except how ironic is it if you're playing, and a lot of your jokes are like that, and you're playing to a crowd that doesn't necessarily get that you're being ironic.
You know, and that's a great point. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk a little bit more about this. That there is a certain level of kind of ethics or social responsibility when you're a public figure creating content that people consume. There is a certain level of, if you want to put the right messages out there, but at the same time, express yourself however you want. So I want to talk more about that when we come back and kind of how to bring kind of this feminist ideology into the types of content we create. So I'm Dr. Kelly here on Lucid Planet Radio with Adrian Truscott, and we'll be right back to wrap up the show. Stay with us.
Wow. Hey, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I'm telling you, I got to pinch myself some days because when each of us gets called to do something that we so not thought was in our wheelhouse to do for a purpose that's so much greater than us, we get to show up and shine.
If you would like to show up and shine on the Dr. Pat Show as a co-host or sponsor, send us an email to inspire@thedrpatshow.com.
Are you sick of feeling overworked with no motivation? Take a break from the daily grind. Life coach Nicole Eisler is here to provide a healing journey of optimism. Passionate and caring, Nicole is no ordinary soul. Her dedication to helping everyone has no limit. Witness the power of positivity. Tune in every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific for Positivity Party Radio with Nicole Eisler on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit BigDreamAwakening.com.
Hey everyone, this is Dr. Pat. I am so thrilled. I've had the honor of working with Leslie Fontaine for the past year or so, and what she has created in her hit program, Sheer Alchemy, transcends what most of us get to listen to or hear in any point in time in our lives. But beyond that, Leslie is working with people all over the world, and she has created something phenomenal based on the feedback and input from the Archangels, from the Ascended Masters, from the light beings, and most importantly, from each and every one of you. So if you want to change your life, if you're ready to step into your own version of Sheer Alchemy, please give Leslie a call at 678-665-3366. And why? Because this is what you're going to be prepared to do. Be amazed, and on your part, connect with the Ascended Masters that are there to help you custom make the life that you are meant to live.
Introducing the Lucid Planet, a digital gathering place featuring cutting-edge, high-vibrational content that will empower and inspire you to become the greatest version of yourself. Visit the Lucid Planet today to stimulate your mind, body, and soul as you connect with a global community of like-minded people. The Lucid Planet is edited by renowned psychologist and author Dr. Kelly Neff, who is here to help you cope with anxiety, connect to your higher purpose, uncover your true passions, and live your dreams. Dr. Kelly's fresh, compassionate perspective emphasizes growth, transformation, healing, and thriving, even in the face of adversity. Say goodbye to bad news and low vibrational media for good, and become part of the larger collective of people working together to navigate the global shift of consciousness and transform the world from within. Join the planet, the Lucid Planet. Visit thelucidplanet.com. Welcome home.
Welcome back to Lucid Planet Radio with Dr. Kelly. I'm here with Adrienne Truscott, who has been talking with us about women and comedy and feminism and, of course, her one-woman show, Asking for It. Adrienne, it's been great having you on. One thing I would really like to know is, where can people see the play and how can people see the play?
I am based in New York City. And the show is kind of like in residence at Joe's Pub, which is a pretty amazing venue. And it has become in some ways an unlikely, because it's quite a classy joint connected to the public theater, an unlikely home for weirdo performance artists and comedians and people who do like something approximating cabaret but different, or approximating comedy but kind of skewed differently. So the next show there is December 1st, but it'll, you know, it sort of happens every 6 to 8 weeks there. So that's a really good place to look for when it's happening again. And I'm working on putting a tour together based on the cities where people, especially high-profile cases like Brock Turner, have had trials or judges or convicted rapists who have been sentenced overly leniently for all the reasons we're all too familiar with. And we're kind of building this like sort of crowdsourced Kickstarter version of like, well, now we got to go here because this just happened. And so we're going to do it like a crowdsourced, like how to fly me there. Then I'll do the show, and I'm going to try and do most of the proceeds to like a local organization to assist women or survivors of, you know, male, female, trans survivors of sexual violence.
I love that idea. That is
awesome. I really do too. And I feel like if we do it as a Kickstarter crowdsourced kind of thing, as opposed to just a venue presenting me, then it's not just my voice. It's like the voice of all the people that chipped in $5 to get me there, to be like, this is not okay.
Yeah, absolutely. We're always looking. People want to get together behind these issues, and sometimes we need a voice and a face, and unwittingly or not, you've definitely become a big part of that representation. And I was mentioning before the break how when you are in the public eye and you are creating content that many people consume and that can influence people, to what extent do you feel that, you know, one needs to be kind of ethical in the type of stuff they put out there and the way that it can affect and shape people's minds?
Golly, I mean, I don't feel like I can be the arbiter of someone else's moral or ethical artistic stance, so I can only speak from my own. I know that when I decided to make this show, you know, it was incredibly important to me that I be very responsible as well as challenging with my material, that I had to walk a line that was really taking risks in order for it to be genuinely provocative and interesting. But I took as much care as I could to, like, the title of the show is actually quite a bit longer, but I can't say it.
It is
on the air.
Yes, look it up. I know.
That's okay. But, you know, the word rape is in the title because I didn't want to be responsible for anything I overlooked for, you know, a victim of sexual violence to come to the show unwittingly. Yeah. And then be like, you know, triggered or traumatized by what I'm doing. So I've took as many precautions as I could to make it real clear that if you bought a ticket, you knew what you were coming, you know, you knew some version of what you were coming to.
That's important.
And I felt like I needed to be responsible to like my love for comedy and how powerful I think it can be and my love of women and how much I wanted this show to speak something that I know we all want to say a lot. You know, I don't think that every single thing I've ever put on stage has been like about social responsibility. This show is for me and it's really dear to me.
It definitely seems like intention plays a big role here, you know?
Yeah. And I think one thing that's interesting is like, I've had a lot of journalists in various direct and indirect ways ask me if there's a quote personal reason for me making this show, which I always understand, or they just flat out say, have you been raped? And is that why you've made this show? And I never answer, yes or no, only because I don't think that only a woman or a person who has been raped is allowed to be the author of material about it. I, for my own taste, think, there's a good chance they'll have better insight and maybe be more interesting about it. But I also wouldn't say to those journalists, I'll say, let me ask you this question. You're sort of assuming that I couldn't just be doing an hour of observational comedy about something that's rampant in our society.
Exactly. Do you know, it's so funny. I never would have even thought to ask you that question because like as a woman living in rape culture, it affects all of us, whether we've literally been raped or not. It still affects us constantly. So that's such a
And the flip side of that I say too, in terms of like social responsibility and in other people's material, I'll say, you know, by the same logic, somebody like, you know, Jim Jeffries or Daniel Tosh, who makes a joke where the laugh seems to be at the expense of the act or the victim of the act, then by your logic, they would be making that joke because they raped someone. I don't think that any one of us wants to think that. And so don't, you know, like your logic needs to be thorough or it needs to walk out the door.
that's exactly, but that's definitely the right answer. And it's just funny. I think being a female, you do face that, particularly in the creative career where you get kind of questioned more or criticized more or kind of have to prove yourself more. And I know we only have like a few minutes left in the show, Adrian, but I would love to hear from you. Do you have any advice for women, you know, like me who want to be comedians or just who want to do anything that's creative and get their voice out there, advice for them on kind of like things I need to, just anything
I can think
of.
I can think of two things. One goes back to what you said at the very top of the show by saying, I've always had like a secret desire to do and then fill in the blank. I feel like that can be comedy, play guitar, make a film, like all of those things. That is still pervasive for a lot of women in society. And although that can be frustrating, I also think there is something about that acts like a sort of amazing creative cocoon because it takes longer for us to put our stuff, she said, remembering not to curse, our stuff.
Good job.
Thank you. Our stuff out there. But in that time, I feel like we get this more private sort of amazing secret weirdo space to develop ideas so that by the time we are ready to put it out there, we often put out something extraordinary because it's had this more private cocoon time. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully you find that time when you're ready to put it out there. Yeah. And in terms of finding that time, I feel like, and maybe Hillary Clinton is a good example, we often feel like we need to get everything perfect before we put it out there. because we're women, and we don't. It's so overrated. Perfection's so stupidly overrated. I know we all know that, but like when it comes to stand-up comedy, like I've seen so many people fail on open mics or sets or material that they've done for years that usually kills all the time, and they can still die on stage. I can die on stage. All of that can happen. But like it's just not that bad. You just get up and do it again. But you don't need to have it perfect in order to give it a go. Like we didn't with our guitars, and I didn't with my comedy.
Adrian, thank you so much. That is all we have time for today. But you are absolutely right, and I'm going to take that to heart. And maybe next time we talk, I'll be not the secret comedian.
Woohoo!
Thank you so much for coming on. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Remember, adriantrescott.com. You can find out way more information. And, guest listeners, thank you so much for joining us. We're here every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Pacific. And you can find out all the things and listen to all the podcasts, thelucidplanet.com, as well as Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, The Lucid Planet. And next week, I will have Dr. Marilyn Joyce here, who's talking about how to heal yourself and how to thrive. So a nice, really health conscious, positive show. So stay tuned for that. Light and love, everyone. And I will see you next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the hit show, Lucid Planet Radio, with renowned psychologist and author, Dr. Kelly Neff. Tune in each week as we illuminate your senses and empower you beyond your daily stressors and hardships. This hit show will captivate you with far-reaching topics and amazing guests as you wake up to the greatest version of yourself. Learn how to navigate the global shift of consciousness as you explore the deeper knowledge, passion, and purpose within. Visit lucidplanetradio.com for upcoming show topics and to contact Dr. Kelly.